Blog Talk Radio.
All right, everybody. We're back again, and thanks for bearing with us with that. We're in the middle of discussing with our co-host, Byron Saunders, and our guest, frequent guest, Mr. Mal Wolfolk, about literally some interesting things about history. The advent of gunpowder and this book that Mal was talking about, Black Spark, White Fire. Here's Mal Wolfolk again. Hey, Mal.
Hello,
back.
Eric. How are you? Thank you.
All right. So, we were just talking about, you know, as we were talking about the Black Spark or White Fire book that you were saying, and I was talking about, you know, how things are fast forward nowadays. That you know, the amount of weaponry that's available to a lot of these places that are designed to keep black people down is, you know, there's no consequence. I mean, what are we really going to do, right? We don't have an army to support us, to come out and protect us and stuff. Hold on for a second. Just put it to your ear. Yeah. So, we're going to have to.
Yeah.
Just regular phone. Can you hear it? Just like.
Hello.
Yeah. Have a little difficult. Yeah, like a regular phone. There you go. There you go, Ma. All
boy,
right.
Oh, boy.
There you go.
Listen, Mal, I want to get into this. What is that book about? What do you get out of it? Black Spark, White Fire.
Right.
Yeah. It essentially says, and it goes back to like 3000 BC, to the old kingdoms of Egypt. It essentially says, and of course it was revisited dramatically from 700 to 1100 in Spain with the Moors, that and it was revisited with the Mayas, and it was revisited with the Aztecs and the Incas and everything else we now see on everything from National Geographic to Ancient Aliens, that these communities and civilizations of color had math, had astronomy and astrology, had, you know, engineering, to engineer canals, be it Mexico or Africa or wherever. And it's undeniable, of course, in southern Spain. It's undeniable everywhere, but southern Spain, as hard as they're working to erase that 400-year history of evolution on every level, it keeps being evident, you know. And rather than embrace that and take a position of, you know, there have been several contributions by many different people over time, and let's just enjoy and respect and pay tribute to each one because they have all contributed to the human existence. Folks have a difficult time doing that. It has to be only one group of people. And then, of course, when you ask them to trace back the origins of it, they can go back 400 years. And then, you know, and at the same time, with archaeologists coming up with evidence of all kinds of other things from all over the world that go back 2,000 years, you know, if you ask somebody to reconcile, well, why do you say this only goes back 400 years? And now people are coming up with references and evidence of this going back 2,000 years from another place that wasn't,
when we were talking about black history, when I was on the air on WLIV, BLS, we talked about, you know, the sphinxes and all that, and the buildings that had been destroyed, you know, with Dr. Ben. Dr. Ben and Dr. Jefferson and a few of the black historians there, and we had a lot of information. I wonder what happened to that information, but I want to know more about this book.
Yeah, the information is still around. Obviously, it's being disseminated. Byron, you want to hop in here? Have you been familiar with this book as well?
Well, I just tuned in, folks. So the book is I think I understand the book that you're speaking of. And I'm not familiar with it. What's the name of the title again?
Black Spark, White Fire. And who's it by? Who's the author again now?
I have forgotten the author, but if you put it into Google, it comes right up with pictures.
Black Spark, White Fire.
Yep. Yep, or go on an Amazon site, of course. It'll come right up.
Uh-huh.
So this dates goes to the weaponizing of materials, right? And so where was gunpowder invented? I mean, that obviously is the linchpin to change history.
China. China.
Was invented,
yep,
in China. Okay. And because
so,
I like – go ahead.
I'm sorry. Well, no, Silk Road, Marco Polo, you know that story.
Mm-hmm.
He brought all that stuff back. And whereas the Chinese were essentially using it for celebration and ornamentation and, you know, that kind of thing, the way we still see firecrackers used, you know, when it got to Europe, they started making what they'd have, muskets and cannons and everything else.
So that leads us to the question, then, what is it in particular about that portion of the world that uses things for destruction and annihilation? And I don't know whether it's within a people inbred.
But what portion of the world? What part of the world are you talking about?
I'm trying to speak in code. I'm talking about a portion of the world where Europeans might dwell. I'm trying to speak in some sort of code. But just as people like to say that somehow inherently black people were inferior and tried to make up this stuff, you know, I don't want to be ignorant like that and say it's inherent that this group of people is violent and murderous. And clearly it's not. I mean, if I was someone like probably your average Trump voter, I would probably my education level would, or my thought process would stop there. But I know through just common sense that, you know, one demographic or one ethnic group of people, it is not all one way. But it sure seems that there's a certain a benefit to maintaining a status quo.
I want to know who wrote
over.
The book. I want to know who wrote
the
book.
Okay, that's one
wait
thing. But let me just finish my point. It seems as though there's a status quo in maintaining this facade the world over. I mean, if we look at how things are, like you said, Mal, you know, everything was referred back to Africa. Now it's not. And you talk about this area of southern Spain. I'm not really familiar with what you're talking about, but that they're trying to change history. And we know from our experiences here in the United States, if you look at a place like Texas or this woman, this senator that just got elected who tried to change history in her state, you know, these people are willing to lie about the facts, clearly. Look at who they got now. Lie about the facts the way they are to make up their own story. And I guess I'm just venting about that, but you know we need to be a little bit more reliable, I think, about telling our own stories. But also, you know, go ahead, Ma.
Was it what the author, black or white? Do you know?
Yes, he's European.
Right.
He's European.
Right.
So he's saying, "Black spark, white fire." It sounds like a warning. Okay?
Right.
So
well,
it sounds like someone saying, you start it, and this is what you get.
Right. That does sound like that.
Okay? So black spark, white fire. Now, what is he saying in that book? Or is he what?
It turns out that he was titling the book to, I'm just going to take a wild guess, to bypass.
Right?
To bypass the knee-jerk responses to people of color getting any credit for anything, you know? And he tells the story, and interestingly enough, like that show Ancient Aliens, where they pose the topics as, could it be, you know? Like, I'm not saying it is, but could it be that, you know, astronomy, astrology, architecture, engineering started in Egypt? You know, could it be so on and so forth, you know. So he leaves the question open, and then he goes on in each chapter, you'll find, referencing lots of books, and impressive to me was lots of books for over several hundred years. So he would reference books by, again, historians who were writing in 200 A.D. and reference people who wrote about the same topics in 1400, 1800, 2000, and so on and so forth, to show that people who supposedly were educated in the same systems came to vastly different conclusions. And, like, you know, it's how has that happened? You know, where's the integrity? And that's what you were saying, Eric. Why is there no integrity by lettered people coming from great institutions, you know, Ivy League schools, Cambridge, blah, 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 Sorbonne, you name it. Why have they been so willing to abandon the integrity and the morality as historians of accurate history? You know, if it's a journalist or a Fox 5 person and they finally come out and say, well, we're not really trying to be news people, we're entertainers. So it doesn't matter what we say because we're creative. So that's one thing, and you don't expect it from them. But from government officials, you know, who should be morally...
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, and Byron, you jump in here when you want. That's what I'm saying. There are no rules. You know, I mean, this is what I've, in my observation over life and watching how things really happened and what the societal norms that society tried to put on us, there are no rules. There is no integrity in, you know, the cowboy trying to settle, these people trying to survive and all that. That's made up. That's made up. You know, the Southern hospitality, Southern gentility, that's made up. That's this antebellum, that's all made up. And now when you have these people who literally, you know, they want to take it back to that time when they made up a life for themselves. I'm talking about slavery. Right. I'm talking about that period of time when they had a race of people that they could look down on and treat like slaves, and were slaves, could own, could direct, to tell them what to do. They literally want to go back to that mythological, unrealistic world that they've created to make themselves. I mean, if you look at this guy today, Corsi, Jerome Corsi, the guy who made up the birther lie, and if you watched him on MSNBC, and the guy, Ari Melber, broke him down. He said, you're willing to invest so much in a lie that you forced yourself to believe this lie. So you disallow anything else. So the fact that you're believing this lie, you're saying you're not really lying because you really believe that. And this is what they're doing. They're having this assault on the country's psyche. But my question is, I'm wondering if that psyche was ever really there. Were we ever really that shining house, country, city on a hill? Were we ever really that? Clearly we weren't. I mean, it's enough for people to live and survive, but really, the world over, if you have these dictators like Putin and now Trump and all these other people running things, where, you know, was it ever really that way?
You know? I get a different feeling. I don't even know a thing about the book, but only the title, Black Spark, White Fire. And it seems to me that someone is trying to send you a message.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Black Spark / White Fire.
Right.
Okay. So has it been written by someone black or someone white?
Yeah, he said someone white.
It sounds like someone white. And it also sounds like, okay, a warning.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So.
Yeah, that could be something that can be.
Now I'm going to read this book.
That could definitely be something that could be a perspective that could be withdrawn from that. You know, I watched, I don't know if you guys probably didn't have a chance to see this. I was watching MSNBC with this guy, Ali Velci, you know, was on this afternoon, and he was talking about the devaluation of black neighborhoods and homes and black wealth in this country. And he really broke it down, the whole redlining issues and why wealth in the African-American community, and there's a Brookings Institute study that they did talking about how wealth is not able, that the redlining of these black neighborhoods, if a neighborhood is 50% black, then the redlining takes effect, and the average cost of the home, comparable apples to apples, say you take a same type of neighborhood in a white community, it's just that one's white and one's 50% black, in that 50% black neighborhood or community, the average home is going to be $23,000 or I think $48,000 less, the value of it, than the average home in that white community or that community that has less than 50% black people. So, and that totals out, too, cumulatively, of all the people that have been denied, 150 $50 billion of wealth, of money, that's lost out, mostly in African-American communities, because the devaluing of our property, and through the advent of redlining and all these other old things, but they show the studies that it's still continuing today. And so black people aren't able to pass wealth down to their children to use that wealth. They said 54% of their wealth is tied up in their home, so they're not able to pass that down or use that wealth to build more wealth or to, you know, do certain things. And so he was running it down. They run it down while this cycle that keeps keeping black people down, particularly if you're trying to develop the black community, right? So what happens then is that we keep having the hoods that are poor because they keep devaluing these neighborhoods. So my question is, why don't we just take it back to where we used to do, the times of Rosewood and Tulsa, and keep our black dollar in our community and let it circulate the 20, 30 times that it does in those other communities, and build our own communities up, because we've taken the resources so much out of our communities and have taken them and contributed them to the larger community that we're not able to benefit from that. And so, you know, we just need to, you know, to move those things. Go ahead, Ma, you wanted to say.
Yeah, you know, I'm still stuck on the title, Black Spark, White Fire. What do you think it means
now? Right, but that title has moved us on
further.
Wait
a minute, no. What do you think it means now?
Yeah, we talked about that a few minutes ago.
I
want
to hear what Mal has to say. What do you think that means?
No, well, essentially the same thing. You know, he was really kind of admitting that even without a spark, there is no fire. Pardon me. Without a spark, there is no fire. And then mm-hmm. again, as one gets into the book, one appreciates and understands the critical value of propaganda and education, being in control of education. And mm-hmm. so essentially he's saying that what started, what other people have claimed, clearly started in Africa, period.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Sure, all life.
And that, right. And then because, you know, people had, you know, discounted and burned scrolls from other libraries like Timbuktu
mm-hmm.
and got the printing press, you know, they essentially took things on that we didn't think were
mm-hmm.
important to protect because, you know, we were just trying to stay where we are. You know, so it was never the case that people did not fight each other of same colors and cultures and everything else.
Sure.
You know, that's been 10 million years. But at each point it happened, people couldn't let it go, you know, which is maybe a human failing. But they couldn't admit that we did our best and we lost, and then we came back and we won, you know. So ergo, the Roman Empire, when it was up and running in its golden age, clearly was present all over the world, all the way up to Hadrian's Wall, halfway up in England. 400 years later, the English people are calling people from Italy a lot of unbecoming words and diminishing
mm-hmm.
them on every level. Now, it's like, excuse me? The Romans were in your country for like 500 years. Did you forget that?
Uh-huh.
So how are you all of a sudden saying that they were not, you know, how could you see the history of Rome for all those hundreds of years and then call the people who come from that and who are maintaining that culture on some levels inferior human beings? What is the need for other people to be inferior for one to feel sufficient? That's the flaw at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
And until that's addressed in some very public forums, you know, that's going to continually be the problem. Because that's what Eric was talking about earlier.
I wonder if the author is suggesting, you know, the white fire.
Right. Well, yeah. that's very provocative.
What I get is he was telling people, after reading the book, he's telling people pretty much what I suggested earlier that I got from him. We don't need to steal other people's accomplishments for us to be of value. We just need to make our own accomplishments.
Mm-hmm.
And we should celebrate everybody's, because there was a Greek age. There was an Egyptian age. There was a Kushite age. There was a Roman age. There was an England rules the sea and sun never sets age. There was a, you know, China for 5,000 years age. There was a Mayan age and an Inca age. There are lots of
mm-hmm.
Greek civilizations. You know, the Vikings were all the way into Italy when the fjords melted, which is why you have blonde-haired Italians when they were ruling the seas and scaring everybody to death throughout England, France, everything else. And
mm-hmm.
allegedly, as far as Europeans are concerned, were probably the first European people to be here. They clearly weren't the first people, but the first Europeans predating Columbus by a couple of hundred years in Newfoundland and Greenland and all that other stuff, Oak Island, where they're finding evidence of all of that. So, you know, his I think cautionary lesson was we undermine each other and we undermine and diminish the integrity and the morality of our own civilizations if we lie about other civilizations.
Right. What do you think, Byron? You want to jump in here real quick?
We lost
Brother Saunders.
Hello. I'm right here. The book's review and interview suggests that, and Richard Poe asked the question, it's on the front of his cover of his book, did African explorers civilize ancient? And he provides throughout the book an Afrocentric theory of ancient Egypt that is argued, as the review says, it's argued so persuasively from a viewpoint that is neither liberal nor conservative, black nor white, but understands that his point of view is Africa's glory and its empires civilized the unknown world of those who were still in the caves. And that's and it's interesting, as Mal was saying, about the Roman Empire all the way up into Britain, 500 years, is that when Britain starts to peel back some of the layers of its own ethnic bearings, you see black Romans in Britain. And that's not an accident, because the Roman Empire got a lot of its mathematics, got a lot of its science, its medical, technical advice based in Egypt and Kemet and the empires of Africa that were so well established that even to this day they still do not know how the pyramids were constructed. And so and this gentleman, Mr. Poe, is said to provide such a powerful presentation that it is, some are convinced that within 20 years, his views will be seen as closer to the historical truth than those of the present defenders of the status quo.
When, you say in 20 years, when was this book written?
It's, let's see, I don't see a date on it, but I'm sure it's not. It's within the 1999 was the book release date. That's pretty recent.
So it's a modern day book, you know.
It's a modern day book. That's right. But you know, it's the same thing for theater. We always in the Western world consider the Greeks to have given us modern day theater. However.
Yeah.
In Greek in Greek theater, if you read and do the research, you will find that Aesop's fable, Aesop was a black African. And you go back in time to find out, well, where did the Greeks get their theory from? And it's understood that they didn't start modern day theater. They absorbed some of the traditions of the tribes and African and Egyptian and Kemet and Kush empires and rolled it into a storytelling format that allowed their civilization to appreciate their own hegemony and status of their own stories. And that's what the Greek and Western civilization have impacted on our modern day world, because that's from a Caucasian point of view.
You mean they were doing it all the way back then, bro?
Sure.
That's what I'm trying to tell you. Yes, sir.
But we've known that. That's nothing new. We've known that. You know that.
But I'll see,
you
and even in our
that.
In our spiritual traditions, our call and response in gospel and spirituals is related back to a Afro theme, African
of
storytelling. And so it's not
the
new
motherland
for us. That's right. It's been a tradition in which we've genetically encoded into our systems, and so that we are not so. I mean, our music and our rhythms are embedded into a genetic code, and it's unique to our existence.
So then the question for me is, how do we combat this state, right? I mean, you know, I mean, where we are in history and in life and in the course of the history of the world. When I was a boy, I thought that when I would get grown that the issues and the ills of racism and prejudiceness would be over and done with. It'll be all right by the time I grew up. Little did I know, certainly, and also didn't expect to have a black president, but that helped to crystallize that we're not there and that this journey of our people is, you know, when I heard about, you know, when you learn about as a kid as slavery, hundreds of years, your people were slaves, 400 years, five. We're still in it. We're still in the middle of this, coming out of this impression, this bondage, this 6,000-year rule, if you will. And what do we do to combat this? What things have we learned? I mean, do we continue to try and try to integrate with these communities that don't want us? You have these, and comes to mind is I took a picture of the Trump's rally in Mississippi at the, I call it White Citizen Council rally, but it was for Sidney Hyde Smith. And I, watching the news, they had him and her up there in the background. You know, you see the crowd at these presidential functions, and there's one lone, dark-skinned brother in the midst of all that milk. And I'm just wondering how he feels going to a rally for a senator who has these racist leanings, and certainly with this president who clearly is racist and promotes white nationalism and white supremacy. And it's just that we need to come together. I mean, I know we're not black people, and no group is a monolithic group, but we need to come together and have some sort of something to combat this, because this is a never-ending cycle. We're going to be doing this for another 400 years trying to get free.
No, we're not. First of all, we got to get rid of Trump.
Right.
Okay, that's the main thing. He is Hitler personified. I keep saying that. So, and we're not saying to separate the groups, but there is only one group of people, and that's man and woman. And there's one group that everybody came from, woman.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? White, black, green, yellow, please. You know?
Right.
So this, you know, and I think this is an interesting book.
Right.
To really talk about and, you know, find out what's going on.
Right.
But it shouldn't lean to the separation, even more separate, being more separated than we are now. We're into the rebirth period. Look at Trump. Trump has divided this country like no other person in a long time.
So what, and then, that's exactly
my point. He's a white gorilla.
That's exactly my point. And maybe you guys could chime in here, because at certain points, it seemed as though segregation might have been better for certain times. You know, I went to a segregated college. I went to a HBCU, and the value that I got for myself, that there was value in me as a person, the self worth is invaluable to me.
I thought you got it from your parents.
Is invaluable. That too. But it continues on as you grow and come out of your parents' household. So that is invaluable to me. So how do we combat the external forces that come into our community and combat our people and protect ourselves against that? Because clearly we're dealing with a number of individuals who do not find value in us, do not want value in people of color, period. But I'm speaking of how we protect ourselves and correct this downward trend. And I don't know if it's coming together through transactional politics, like Mia Love was on the other day talking about transactional politics, not really realizing that the only reason she got elected was that she was perfect character for them as a black Mormon conservative. She would fit their little casting call perfectly, you know, so. How do we get past this? And I'm wondering if you guys have any suggestions, or if you guys have, I know you've given some thought about that, but I'm interested to hear your thoughts about that. Either one of you guys.
Well, essentially, you know, the old things are the same things. And Tulsa tells a story, which is why it remains an inspiration. All we have to do, and again, D. Park Gibson, in the 70s when he wrote the book 30 Billion in the Black, and then he wrote subsequent books every couple of years, you know, with a greater number of gross national products of African Americans.
Mm-hmm.
And when Deepak Gibson wrote 30 Billion in the Black, he said, I think the equivalent was something like the 8th or 9th largest economy in the world that we had here. While we thought we were poor and desperate, we had the numbers of dollars that passed through our community equated, I believe it was the 8th or 9th. It's worth everybody taking a look at that. We have the money. It's just that, to your point, Eric, we don't hold it. Yes, there are other communities that will spend that money in their community 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10, 12 times, even willing to pay a premium for products and services to keep that money in the community. And so, at that point, people can't come in and do anything because they can't take what you don't give them.
Right.
And yes, it's both. It's that economic concentration, and yes, it's the political concentration. Everybody who can has to vote because it does make a difference, and where it makes a difference is when the person you want to represent you is representing you. So to those other people during the election that said, nothing ever changes, it doesn't matter, well, you know, you and I both know, all of us here know, well, nothing ever changes because you didn't vote for somebody who would change it in your direction.
Mm-hmm.
Not because it can't be done, because if one group of people who you didn't vote for can change things against you, then why wouldn't you automatically think that somebody you did vote for with your interests could help you? So that's essentially it. Malcolm really said it best. We have no permanent friends or enemies, permanent interests. Now the question that I've raised for 40 years is why are our 100 largest African-American organizations in their annual conventions not saying what we're saying here? Why is that not a prominent committee in every large organization that gathers 5 to 50,000 people every year to talk about how much they're doing and how smart they are and how well-dressed they are? Why isn't there a major panel on that which we are talking about? Essentially, how do we concentrate dollars? How do we open up banks? How do we open up, you know, CDCs? How do we open up credit unions that aren't just in the community but maybe statewide to reinvest in our communities? Why aren't we developing real estate investment trusts so that each person does not have to own their own house in our communities? You open it up. Make it a real estate investment trust. Let 100 people own the properties in the communities. What difference does it make? Everybody owns a piece. Certain people get leases to occupy it. They're going to pay rent to the group that owns it. And everybody gets a share, and we keep, you know, focused control of the properties in our communities. 20 years. But and to some, you know, well, you know, there's no hiding from it because everybody else knows but us. But why, for instance, black realtors and black accountants and black lawyers are not holding forums to tell people in black communities that every day, I don't understand. I do not understand how the National Bar Association.
That's what I'm talking about. I mean, making moves that are going to put us in positions of power and strength. Now, if whatever we do, everybody else wants to emulate. If whatever we sing, people want to buy. If whatever we wear, people want to buy. If however we wear our hair, people want to go. They had a term today in the news called blackfishing about this girl over in Europe who some of her pictures, she looks black in some of the pictures because we know that she's probably trying to make herself look black, even though she said she's not, you know. But this is the appeal. Everything that we have, people want to take, except to catch the hell that comes along with living in this skin, right?
That's right.
I mean, they even want that to be temporary. They want to have a tan and have it to go away after a while, right?
Right, right.
So,
it's a dual educational process, Eric, because on one hand, yes, they want our rhythm, they want our good looks, they want the brown skin over the pink skin. They want to be able to dance. They want to cook. They want to do all those things. And the one thing that they will never, ever, and I think this is what Richard Poe's book is accentuating, is that they must first accept that their traditions and culture and art and politics and medicine and education came from Africa. once they establish that and accept that as a singular truth, because anthropologists keep finding the early man, Lucy, Eve, Adam, the languages around the world, you know, spoken
and
around
man
the world. That's
and
right.
Byron.
So
Byron.
Yeah.
Byron. Louis
yes.
Leakey. The earliest
yes.
he was a white man. And he
yes.
found according to Dr. Benn and Dr. Clark and Dr. Jefferson, and according to my readings, he
was it Leakey that founded
yeah.
Lucy?
He, no. He founded the in the Olduvai Gorge in West Africa.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I have that book. You know, it's a little small book. I haven't been able to find it. But his name was Louis Leakey, and he was
right.
a white man.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
he
white,
found
white
out
man.
That, a white man. He was a white trapper or somebody. And he wanted to find out where man came from. And it's in the history books. If you talk to the scholars of Dr. Benn.
Right.
Dr.
Right.
Benn was the first person I heard about this. And this was some years ago, even before I started at WLIB.
Right.
All right.
You know, and also, what I was going to say is that, this society, you know, it's like Stacey Abrams running for governor, right? You can't have a fair election unless one of yours is in the room and one of theirs is in the room, right? I mean, you know. Everything comes down to who's actually the cogs in the wheel, who's making the mechanisms run, right? So,
right,
you know, the people at the top, like they got the Republicans just confirmed this judge, Farr, I think his last name was, right? And this guy
yeah.
was very much responsible, and I think you guys probably maybe Byron, you're a little bit more familiar with him than me, but I think he's responsible for furthering the notion or giving rulings came down on the side of voter suppression or came down on the side of, you know, honoring the Confederacy. I think that's what this judge's rulings have been, or came down on the side of more presidential powers or whatever to enable someone like Donald Trump to make some of the moves that he's eventually going to make to get out of jail, right? Are you guys familiar with this judge? His last name is.
The appointee is going into the eighth district. In any event, his appointment as a conservative, and it's here's the constitutional problem that we are under right now. We've been in a constitutional crisis for the last 2 years, and they keep trying to say we're heading to the line. We've crossed that line the day he was elected. Okay.
Yeah.
And that line that has been crossed thus far is, and no one has challenged it because Republicans have had control of the House, the Senate, and the executive office. And yes, they've been stacking the courts, and they played this treasonous game. We're in a very delicate condition right now with our democracy, and it's not just about Trump. It's about the entire system itself and how it
exactly.
has been allowed, how it has been allowed to circumvent its own rule of law, its own constitution, by allowing the far right or the far left, mostly the far right, and a conservative point of view ever since
mm-hmm.
the end of the Civil War. This notion of wanting the South to rise again has not been put to rest. And as a result, the conversations and the arguments that are ongoing right now and those that are about to really explode in this next – in 2019 – in both houses, is that there has been acts of treason that have not been called upon both houses, mostly in the Republican legislative initiatives, because they've been trying to circumvent the Constitution and every one of the
yeah.
amendments, and that has to be challenged. And if we don't challenge it on that level. Yes, and if we don't challenge it on that level, then we don't have the guns to to start a militia. So let's put that one aside right now. It's not without possibility. But the only thing we have in our cachet right now to protect us and our democracy is the Constitution and our right to vote. If that goes, this empire is totally washed out. It
well,
will never
you know,
sustain
it. Yeah, well, I mean, listen, it's real simple to me. I mean, it's like one of these mob movies. They got guys on the inside, right?
Yeah.
They got guys on the inside. Trump's got guys on the inside. He's got the judges, and like I've been saying on this show, it's a race. Whether he could stack up his team to be in the right place, and just today they tried to have a vote in the Senate.
Okay.
To protect, hold on a second, Mom.
Yeah.
They tried to have a vote in the Senate to protect Robert Mueller's investigation, and Mitch McConnell would not allow that vote to come up. Cory Booker, I think, and maybe one of his other colleagues introduced something. They would not allow that to come up.
All right.
So,
2 minutes.
I wanted to say something. Okay, 1 second. Let me just finish my point, then we're going to wrap this up. Just wanted to say that. Okay, go ahead. Kay wants it.
Yes, I do. This dizzy white woman from, what is she, from Mississippi? The one who just was reelected?
If you want to talk about
a Neanderthal.
Yeah.
Or she would go to a hanging and she'd laugh about it and they put her back in office? This is the biggest crime I can imagine.
Yeah.
This is stupid.
The race is front and center. Well, yes, it is.
She looks
but
like
race
a,
is
I don't know, dizzy
center.
Like a. Lick up, please.
Yeah, right. But you know, the thing is, Kay, race is front and center in a conversation right now.
Yeah, and I'm
tired. And there's no escaping it. And there will be a reckoning because it is front and center. There's no more hiding behind.
Help that reckoning.
That's right.
Yes. Yeah, that's the whole thing. I mean, we're winding down, but that's the whole thing that I'm talking about. Is there's what ought to be. Or there's what we claim and there's what we actually do, right? So what America and what the society claims it is and claims that it's doing is different than what's actually going on. I mean, I know we're striving to be better and to be our higher self and all of that stuff that comes along, but it sure seems like a bunch of malarkey, you know? And as a person who sees it, I mean, you know, we're walking around, educated black people. We're probably not catching the same kind of hell that the average person in the hood or might not be as well off or educated as we are. And so, you know, we don't. It doesn't affect us as directly. So, you know, but that's it. We're going to have to shut down now. We're winding down. I want to say thank you to Mr. Mal Woolfolk for coming on and sharing that with us about this book. Mr. Mal.
And thank you, Eric, and Kay. Well, and always good to hear Barrett.
Okay.
All right.
And I want to say one other thing. Next week, we're going to open the phones.
Okay, great.
All right. So people can take our number. We'll give it out on the air next week. And they can call in. We want to hear your opinions.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Mal. Talk to you again next week.
Thank you, guys.
Brother Byron Saunders, give us your signing off there, sir.
Peace and love, always.
All right, brother. Thank you very much. Talk to you later.
Now. Thank you, Niall.
Thank you very much. This has been the Kay Thompson Live Show. You can listen to the show every Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m. It's live on the Blog Talk Radio. Go to blogtalkradio.com/Kay Thompson Live. Or you can listen to the show anytime you want because it is archived. So you can listen to any one of our episodes that we have out there. Thank you for listening to Kay Thompson Live Show. I'm the person that's known as the son, also Citizen Payne, and you are?
Kay Thompson Live. Join us every Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m. Everybody, thank you.
There it is, everybody. Thanks for listening. We will talk to you again next week. All right? All righty. Here we go. We're going to play a little music for you, our out music that we like here. I call it Kay's theme. Thank you.